Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Section where people and ideas meet. I'm Reuben Stern. The way schools are evaluated in Missouri is likely to change. Last week, the State Board of Education gave preliminary approval to an updated set of standards for public schools, and earlier this year, Missouri was granted a waiver from the federal government that allows the state to use its own system to assess how well schools are doing. That means Missouri is free from having to follow some of the controversial provisions of the federal No Child Left Behind Act. So what might all this mean when it comes to the education of our kids? What is the best way to know whether our schools are actually doing a good job of what they are supposed to be doing? And if standardized testing is indeed the answer, then what exactly should those tests be measuring? Our guest today will help us evaluate the way that we evaluate our schools. First, Carol Mayer is an assistant professor in the MU College of Education. She previously worked as a school superintendent and a principal. Welcome to our program, Carol Mayer.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also with us at the table today, Sally Beth Lyon is the Chief Academic Officer for Columbia Public Schools. Welcome back to our program, Sally Beth Lyon.
Thank you.
Glad to have you back in our studio today.
It's a pleasure.
We also have at the table today Margie Van Deven. She is the Assistant Commissioner in the Office of Quality Schools for the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Welcome to the program, Margie Van Deven.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us as well. We'll also hear from a couple of Columbia teachers, and we'll get a bit of an interview with the U.S. Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, that we recorded last week. We also hope to hear from you and our audience today. As a parent, what do you look at to decide whether your child's school is doing a good job? We hope you'll give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. I want to start off with one of the teachers. Our team went out to Benton Elementary last week and talked to a few of the people there. And the first clip that we want to play from that is Corinne Greer. She teaches fifth grade at Benton Elementary, and we asked her about assessing how students and how the school are doing and what the best way to do that is. And here's what she had to say.
I really do believe that, you know, if we use standardized testing in the correct way and in a positive way and look at the gains and not just proficient or not, we can use that to really show how teachers, you know, are with their students, how effective they are, and actually empower students to where they want to learn. I think I see that. I talk to my kids all the time, you're going to do great. Mm-hmm. And I think we're able to see growth in that because of the relationship, and it'll come out in those tests.
So again, that was Corinne Greer, a fifth grade teacher at Benton Elementary. And Sally Beth, maybe we start with you on this question. What can you and what can you not find out from standardized testing?
Well, standardized tests, as we all know, are one measure at one point in time. So they're an important measure of school and system quality, I think, but they can't be the only measure. I love what Ms. Greer said about helping students set their own goals with standardized testing measures and looking at individual student growth, not just a different group of children's level of proficiency every year, so that they're about learning, not just about status.
Right. And how does that fit with the way that standardized testing is used generally within education? Carol, maybe you can answer a little bit about that.
Well, I think I really like the way she talked about empowering students. And we also think, I'm in principal and superintendent preparation. We talk a lot to our leaders about how to go about sharing their leadership with teachers, sharing leadership even with students in schools. And so I think when we talk about standardized testing, we need to keep in mind always that this is a measure of improvement. And certainly we need to look at whether this is a socially just system, whether we are marginalizing students in certain areas, in certain types of situations or settings. But to keep in mind that it is, like Sally Beth said, one measure of the effectiveness of schools. And how do we go about saying what is effective? We need to define that. And I think that that is up to each district as to decide what is effective for us. And how does that look? And for our community, mm-hmm. sure.
Right. I want to go ahead and bring in a little bit from an interview that we had last week. We managed to get a few minutes on the phone with the U.S. Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, and we asked him a little bit about the No Child Left Behind Act and the waivers that are being handed out to a lot of states. I want to go ahead and play that clip. It's about 3 minutes long, and we're going to hear him talk about a few things related to this, and then we can come back and follow up a little bit on what he says. So let's go ahead and play that clip. And then we'll come back and continue to talk. This is the U.S. An interview that we did last week with the U.S. Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. Well, Missouri is one of, I guess, 32 or so states that were granted a waiver on some of the provisions of No Child Left Behind. And I wonder, what are some of the important changes that we can expect to see nationally as a result of all of these states having waivers?
Well, first of all, I just fundamentally thought No Child Left Behind was broken. And it lots of problems, but it led to a dumbing down of standards. It led to a narrowing of the curriculum. It led to a teaching to the test. And none of those things, it was very prescriptive top-down from Washington. None of those things I thought were good for children or good for education, ultimately good for our country. And obviously, my preference would have been to have Congress fix it and fix it in a bipartisan way. But obviously, Congress is pretty broken these days. So thankfully, we had the ability to provide waivers. And we've seen the vast majority of the country step up, including Missouri. And what you're going to see is people looking at, I think, much more thoughtful indicators of success, looking at multiple factors, not just looking at one test score, but looking at reductions in dropout rates, looking at increases in graduation rates, looking at are more students going on to college and being successful in college. And I think so it's a big, big step in the right direction. And just appreciate Missouri's, courage and leadership and thoughtfulness on this. And I really do think states are going to help lead the country where we need to go.
Right. If not the provisions that were laid out in the No Child Left Behind legislation, what do you see as the right kind of mechanisms to ensure that schools are doing what they're supposed to? There's a measurement of the outcomes, but in terms of ensuring that the right things are being done in those schools, what do you see in terms of making sure that's going on?
A couple things. And again, I always just refer to No Child Left Behind, however well-intentioned, as a blunt instrument, or like a hammer used to kill a gnat. And so a couple things. First of all, under No Child Left Behind, there were no rewards for successful schools and successful districts. The only reward was you weren't labeled a failure. That didn't make sense to me. So for districts and for states to be identifying their high-performing schools, the rapidly improving schools, those schools in disadvantaged communities, be they rural or inner-city urban, that are making great progress, how do we celebrate that progress? How do we give them more room to move? How do we learn from them? We think that that's really important. How do we more effectively support our teachers and principals in helping them become more effective? And then when we truly do have schools that are very low performing, where it's simply not acceptable, are we willing to challenge the status quo there? So this is, a more nuanced, more comprehensive, yes, I think a little bit more complicated, but a much more realistic picture of both success and those in the middle and those that are truly struggling where we need to do something better.
And what about making sure that those students at the bottom are, in fact, getting a quality education? Because that was one of the main goals of No Child Left Behind, right?
Well, yes, those are the main goals. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. In fact, many of the schools that were labeled failures under No Child Left Behind actually got worse. So as you know, we've had a massive effort through the school improvement grant programs, $5 billion to turn around chronically underperforming schools. And 1,300 schools are being turned around. These were the lowest performing schools in the state. I've visited dozens of them, actually just leaving Topeka, Kansas, where I met with a fantastic principal and teachers from the school. It was one of the 6 worst high schools in the state, that is showing just tremendous improvement in the past 2 years. And while all these schools have a long way to go, I think that's the way to challenge the status quo when educational outcomes, academic outcomes are unacceptable. I just appreciate the tremendous leadership and courage we're seeing from teachers and principals across the country in these school turnaround efforts.
Okay, again, that was an interview that we did last week with the U.S. Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. By phone. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about standardized testing and other ways to measure how our schools are doing. Joining me in the studio are Carol Mayer, assistant professor in the MU College of Education, Sally Beth Lyon, the chief academic officer for the Columbia Public Schools, and Margie Van Deven, assistant commissioner in the Office of Quality Schools for the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. For those of you in our audience, what are the measures that you think are important to determine whether our schools are doing a good job? We'd love to hear your ideas. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And we'd like to remind you that Intersection takes place live every Monday at 2 on KBIA and online at kbia.org. You can be part of our conversation at that time, watch video of us in the studio, and join in an online chat by going to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. Margie, I want to ask you, one of the big things is that Missouri is now free to do some different kind of assessing of its schools and what's going on there. What's going to be different? What's Missouri going to do differently from what No Child Left Behind required of the states?
Well, I think one important thing to remember is that they did not waive the requirement that we still need to continue to assess all students grade level 3 through 8 in math and communication arts, also once at the high school. And also we do need to assess all of our students at least once in science in each of those areas. So that particular component was not waived through this option. So the standardized component is there. What they did allow us to do would be to take forward our own state accountability system. And Missouri has been very proud of the Missouri School Improvement Program that implemented beginning in 1990. And so instead of sending two reports on the measures, in the past, if we delivered mathematic results or communication art results, the way that those were calculated on two different reports could look conflicting. Now, that is very confusing to parents. It's very confusing to educators. It's very difficult for school leaders to determine which route we need to take in order to set our improvement targets. So what the waiver allowed us to do was to insert additional indicators aside from mathematics and communication arts for our state accountability system. We will also be looking at social studies. We'll be looking at science. We'll be looking at attendance rate, graduation rate, and a number of college and career readiness indicators that the secretary was mentioning earlier. However, we've really approached it as an aligned accountability system where we do have a federal component in the center. We know that there are some federal components that we need to work with. We've expanded it to add additional state indicators for accountability. And we really do believe that the local accountability that is the real cusp of what happens in your buildings is critical to improvement efforts for the children in our state. So that's how we're approaching it, starting with that federal component that we must meet, adding additional layers for the state level accountability, and then offering the flexibility at the local level to determine what it is that district deems the most appropriate for their building or district.
And how does that work? How does that trickle down into an individual school, an individual family in Columbia? Sally Beth, maybe you could help explain that.
Well, just as Margie describes, all school systems in school districts in Missouri operate as agents of the state. And so we pick up where the state left off in terms of using the measures of success that the state has said we're holding you accountable for, and then adding to those priorities that our own local communities say are key for us. Columbia, and we do that through something called the Comprehensive School Improvement Plan, which is basically our school system's strategic plan. And Columbia had a comprehensive revision of its strategic plan 2 years ago that included hundreds of community members and several different committees with 20 or 30 patrons and parents each on them that told us in the areas of student performance, in the areas of facilities and resources, in the areas of highly qualified staff, these are the things we expect of our school system.
And how is that potentially going to change? I mean, what's Columbia doing that matches those kind of state assessment things that Margie just talked about? And what is going to have to be done differently in Columbia as a result of those kinds of changes?
That's actually something that I'm really excited about, because I feel like we had 2 years on the state. put a different way, I feel like great minds are thinking alike in terms of best practices. Our comprehensive school improvement plan that we developed 2 years ago has a very strong focus on college and career readiness. It requires that our students perform well, not just on the MAP test, which has been our state assessment, but also on the assessments that lead up to the ACT, which measure college readiness. So I feel as though we're really very well. We've always had a very strong AP program, advanced placement. Mm-hmm. We're expanding dual credit, which are some of the things the state will now begin to measure under our new MCIP 5 accountability. So I feel as though Columbia is pretty well aligned.
Right. And what about the opposite end of that spectrum? So, I mean, making sure that a lot of students are getting prepared for college, that number goes up is an important part. But then there's also that other goal that the No Child Left Behind Act had, which is making sure that every kid is getting a level of education that's satisfactory. Now, we heard the Secretary of Education sort of say that it didn't necessarily meet that goal as a piece of legislation. What is going to be done differently in terms of that goal, of making sure that, you know, every student is achieving at some level that is proficient?
Well, I think that kind of goes back to that word standardized that we were discussing earlier. I really appreciated what the fifth grade teacher said about using those tests appropriately. And I know some of the practices that we were discussing that they've implemented in the Columbia School District is to use the formative assessment component so that you know where every child currently, I mean, it's October or it's September, and where that child is right now and where do we need to take them in order for them to be on track with where they need to be. That's done at a formative level in the classroom on a day-to-day basis. The State Board of Education spent a significant amount of time discussing whether or not that should be a part of the state accountability system, and it was determined that that really didn't have a place in the state accountability system other than to recognize that that is a critical practice that must take place at the local level. But for accountability, at the end of the day, we would use the summative test to see if the child did attain that content. But that test should take care of itself. No more teaching to the test, no more teaching to just the MAP, but really focusing on that day-to-day instruction. Where can I as a teacher do a better job? Because I'm with my data teams recognizing that, boy, you know, 60% of the children got that concept, but 40 didn't. How did they get it and how did these 40 not? Those are all aligned practices that they are managing very well at the local level that we measure at a standardized level at the end of the year.
And how does that work? I mean, how do you all go about making sure that, you know, a school in Columbia or a student in Columbia, let's say, has the same likelihood of getting a good education as a student, mm-hmm. you know, in one of the small towns in the north part of the state or the southern part of the state where it's more rural and the school system might not be as strong and have as strong a base as a city like Columbia might have?
Missouri is a very diverse state. It is a very diverse state. I would almost say it has to be one of the most diverse states in our nation as far as the makeup of a number of our school districts. And so that has been a challenge for us. And I think the Missouri School Improvement Program, again, those that began the process in 1990 were really thinking about how do we put resource standards in place, process standards in place, so that we can set a level of expectation for every child. And right now we are making, for the college and career readiness indicators in particular, we're doing a lot of work with virtual education and other areas where students can access. We're looking for ways to help districts deliver content without necessarily having the child have to be physically seated in that seat for the X amount of hours. It's about gathering content and competency more than just sitting in the actual classroom base. So there's a lot of ways that we're looking progressively to ensure that every child has that opportunity. And the standards do help us do that.
Okay. This might be a good time to bring in another one of the teachers, or actually mm-hmm. the principal that we talked to. Out of Benton Elementary, we talked to Principal Troy Hogg, among the people that our team talked to, and here's a clip from him and what he said on this question of assessing student performance.
I think a variety of measures should be considered. I think they should take a look at the data that the building itself collects within house and kind of see what we're showing as far as our student growth, how our students are performing. You know, they only look at the state test right now, and it's just one measure for one time of the year. And again, it's kind of like I would say an autopsy report where, you know, you get it at the end of the year. In fact, they take it at the end of the year. We don't even get that test result until the beginning of the next school year, so we're even another 4 or 5 months behind when the test was actually taken to get those results.
Okay, again, that was Principal Troy Hogg at Benton Elementary School. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about standardized testing and the ways that we measure how schools and students are doing. Joining me in the studio are Carol Mayer, assistant professor in the MU College of Education, Sally Beth Lyon, the chief academic officer for Columbia Public Schools, and Margie Van Deven from the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. For those of you in our audience, how much emphasis do you think should be placed on standardized testing in the public schools? Share your thoughts. Give us a call, 573-882-8900. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. One of the things that Troy mentioned there, along with a range of things to look at when you're talking about how students are doing, we've been talking about that. But he also talked about that idea of it being kind of an autopsy report, where you get this after the fact, and sometimes it's not for months after the test was taken before anybody sees how students did. I wonder. Carol, maybe you could talk a little bit about this. Is there a way to fix that problem? Or is that just endemic to the nature of the way educational assessment works?
Gosh, I wish I knew if there was a way to fix that problem. Actually, testing is what it is, and it's given at the end of the year, and there is probably no way that we could get results in real time. I mean, right away. That probably will never happen. But what we can do is make sure that our offerings are standardized. And the State Department does a great job of taking what we are now calling the Common Core standards. That's the new curriculum that we are headed towards and the nation is headed towards. And taking those, breaking those down, breaking all those standards down into small chunks for teachers to look at and for districts to decide. This is important for our district. This is important for our community to teach so that we don't throw just teaching up to chance. It is standardized, but it does fit the community. So can testing help any more than it is helping now? Can we fix the problem? I don't know that, but I do know that what we teach kids is much more standardized, and we don't leave that up to chance any longer.
Right. And what did that look like when you were a superintendent? Like, what did you do in order to address that standardization, making sure that students had what they had access to what they needed?
You know, what I have always believed is school improvement is on the shoulders of the teachers. And teachers get blamed and get the credit for lots that go on in schools. But what I tried to do was to understand that teachers have in their grasp what it takes to have a great school. And what we do to support teachers is what really makes the difference. And so although we expect our teachers, and I expected our teachers to follow the curriculum, I know that it's instruction. It's really instruction that is the bottom line, that a great teacher will do great things for kids. That's what, when I was a superintendent and all of us, that's where we're looking. We're looking for great teachers, and we have many great ones. We have to find a way to support them and to allow them the leadership role so that they can help others in their profession.
And I do think a part of the support, as you say, is providing a clear and specific curriculum. And thank you for bringing up the Common Core State Standards, because that's really a very important antidote to what Secretary Duncan was referencing when he spoke about different standards in different states.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because most parents probably have no idea what you're talking about right now. So could you explain a little bit what you mean when you say that Common Core Standard?
Sure. And Margie will help, both of my girlfriends will help here. The National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers, so the heads of departments of education around the 50 states, together commissioned the writing of standards, curriculum standards, statements of what students should know and be able to do, kindergarten through 12th grade, in English language arts and in mathematics, and for technical reading and writing and literacy skills in the other subject areas like science and social studies. And 45 or 46 of the states have adopted those, including Missouri. And so we at the district level are now about the process of realigning our local curriculum to match those standards. And they really are standards intended to prepare students for the rigors of 21st century careers and or college. So they're very aligned to, for instance, the ACT college readiness standards. And we're pretty excited about the fact that they really do up the bar in terms of rigor. We're needing to develop all new assessments and all of that, professional development, a clear curriculum, local common formative assessments, like Margie described, are some of the tools that we need to be putting in our teachers' hands.
And I think teachers, when I was teaching, we did so in isolation. Often we would go into the classroom, we would close the door, and we would teach. Now the Common Core standards and the way in which we assess schools and assess improvement demand that teachers collaborate and that they are no longer in isolation, that they help each other, support each other. And principals and superintendents are there to provide the resources that they need to be successful. But we can no longer go into the classroom and close the door. We have to be in this together, and Common Core is going to demand that.
Actually, today, our listeners are, their parents are aware of the fact that students aren't in school today in Columbia. Today, Monday the 24th, is a collaboration day for teachers. And that's a time to do precisely what Carol describes, come together around this fall's assessment data. We're not looking at MAP data that's 6 months old by now. They're looking at assessments they've given students just as school began to say, what do each of our children need? For our kindergartners, which letters do these kids know and which letters do they need to learn next? So that the assessment results and the collaboration is about teaching and learning, not about measuring after the fact.
Okay, we have a caller from Columbia. We have a few minutes before we're going to take a break here. Linda from Columbia, you're on the line with us.
All right. I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew about Khan Academy, spelled K-H-A-N, which you can find online.
And, Sally Beth is nodding.
And so some people know about it. Great. And the wonderful thing is that you don't really need to do testing in the class as such because the teacher has what they call a dashboard that shows every child is working on a digital device, which gives instant feedback on a kind of a dashboard. So the teacher can look at this dashboard and know exactly where every child is at any moment. They can tell where how long it's taking them to work on a particular section of their work. This is primarily math. And also can tell if a child is having trouble so that if there's several children having trouble in the same spot, the teacher can have a little class on that particular spot. Also, peer teaching is really big in this kind of a classroom where the first person to turn to is another child who may already have gone through that section, and the teacher could help one child direct to another child who already knows this. Also, it's very interesting that this kind of a classroom is working for competency of every child at wherever they are. And so it's not a competition kind of environment where you're trying to beat each other out for grades or anything like that, or where you're dependent solely on the teacher to direct everybody because all the children are working at their own rate.
Linda, I'm going to have to stop you for a second. We're going to have to go into a break here.
But I
want to thank you for calling in with that. After the break, we're going to give our panelists a chance to respond and talk about that system and whether that could be more widely used. I want to remind everyone this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about standardized testing and other ways to measure how schools and students are doing. And we're going to take a short break. We hope that you'll join our conversation as well. Our number, 573-882-8925. Stick around. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about standardized testing and other ways to determine how well schools are doing. Joining me in the studio are Carol Mayer, assistant professor in the MU College of Education, Sally Beth Lyon, chief academic officer for Columbia Public Schools, and Margie Van Deven from the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. For those of you in our audience, as a parent, what do you look at to decide whether your child's school is doing a good job? Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Before the break, we had a caller, Linda from Columbia, was talking about a sort of an online tool that students can use to help assess how they're doing. Teachers get a dashboard for that. And I'm just wondering how that fits in with what is going on in the classrooms and how much more of that we might be able to see in terms of getting instant response to that wider question of testing the students' knowledge and ability. Sally Beth, maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
There's no question that technology is going already has and will continue to provide incredibly powerful tools for teaching and learning. And honestly, the systems that Dr. Mayer and Margie have described about teachers using formative assessments to know what, and I've talked about teachers using formative assessments for to know exactly what each child knows and is ready to learn next, is asking teachers to keep a tremendous amount of information about students in their heads or in anecdotal records. So technology, as the caller described, really can help with that. There are increasingly lots of online tools, and we're developing our own, that enable teachers to use self-paced tutorials and other technology tools for learning.
Mm-hmm. And what about that being something deployed on a wider scale? I mean, Columbia Public Schools is one district in a whole country. I mean, is that something that potentially could make its way into the assessment plans of a state like Missouri?
It is. When you look at the Smarter Assessment Consortium, that's where you're going to hear many conversations about consortium throughout the nation, because what we're doing in Missouri, if we're doing it to similar standards that they're doing across the nation, we share everything. Educators are about sharing everything. So not only will we be able to share items that are used for assessments, but also the formative tools that are in place, ideas on how to provide immediate feedback to our students. The assessments that we're looking at would now be computer adaptive, so that we would know exactly where our students are falling when they're taking the standardized test, so that it would give us much better feedback, that we'd be able to do much more with those results, knowing which track the student ended up taking on the actual assessment. So there's just a wealth of roads that we can follow with technology that will really inform our teaching and learning in the future.
Mm-hmm. And now. Are there prescriptions for what sort of technology access students should be having in the classroom now? I mean, is that part of the learning standards that go on in the Missouri classrooms?
There are standards for the level of accessibility that each building should have. Now, of course, that's a whole other story, because in some of our rural areas, there still is some there are challenges in getting access. And so those are issues that the state is dealing with.
Right. And can you talk a little bit about what exactly are students supposed to be learning related to technology these days? Or, I mean, do you know the details of that in terms of what is required or what schools are hoping to
achieve? The interesting thing is we talk about our digital natives now, and so it's no longer about learning technology necessarily. Now, you all can correct me if you would like to chime in on that. But it's just it's a tool. They're accustomed to using it. Your three-year-old's picking up the iPhone and can handle that with no problem. And so how do we transition our learning centers into their world is really what it's all about. So it's not teaching them how to use the technology. They know how to use the technology. It's how do we develop our systems and transition into their worlds.
That's so true.
Yeah.
We do have technology literacy curriculum embedded into, ideally, it's embedded into the teaching of all other subjects, not taught as a separate entity, but exactly right. Not so much about how to use the devices, but things like ethics in the use of technology, being wise consumers of online research and other content, being able to distinguish the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. And that will be a big emphasis in the Common Core as well. Not just that students can critically read a textbook, but that they can critically analyze online content.
And how does that get assessed? I mean, you know, the traditional standardized test for English and math, it's pretty basic stuff, right? Like you have to work math problems, and that's how you know if a kid knows how to do math. How do you know if a kid knows how to make good ethical decisions related to the use of technology, right? How does that work?
You know, that's been a struggle for us for forever. You know, how do we know that children are learning to be safe? How do we know that they are growing up to be good people with good hearts and care about each other and take care of each other? We have lots of very fancy, and any of my grandchildren could show me up in this area. We have lots and lots of technology and lots of tools that help us to live a better life. Is it making us a better person? That's a question that schools have struggled with for a long time. And we of course, would like to, it's important for society that we answer those questions, but it's also important that we work with our community and with our parents. It's something that just hasn't happened with the invent of the iPad. It's mm-hmm. been with us forever.
Right. So we're not at a place yet where tests are going to hope to be measuring those kinds of things in the students, even though the idea is to go beyond reading and math. Like, how far mm-hmm. is it going to go in terms of trying to figure out the degree to which students are learning important skills? What is going to be tested in the future? What should we be thinking about?
Well, a little bit that I've heard about the new assessments being developed to measure the Common Core State Standards, which, as Margie said, is being developed by the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, of which Missouri is one of several state members, might go something like this. A three-day testing time rather than just a single sitting, as with the current test. The first day, as a student, I read some material about a topic and write some short answers based on my reading of that information. The second day, I watch some additional content about the topic, a different source that is some digital source of information. So now we're expecting students not only to, as I said, be consumers of written text, but also of an online content. And then I collaborate with a group of teachers, of students in my class, sharing notes. By the way, I was supposed to take notes on that video or whatever mm-hmm. I watched. And there's actually a collaboration component, because a part of what we want to prepare students to do isn't just to be themselves consumers and analyzers of information, but we want them to be able to talk with each other about it. And then the third day, I write my own essay that is synthesizing the information I read, the information I viewed or experienced online, the information that I shared in a collaborative conversation with my classmates. And so the assessment is of a much higher level. It's going to be hard to grade. I don't know how you're going to figure that out. But it really does begin to draw in those multiple sources of information and ways of analyzing them.
That's fascinating. Margie, how would you grade something like that? I mean, how do you set standards for thought, I suppose, is part of the question there.
That's why we end up in the end result is looking at the outcome that is produced. So the processing along the way is part of the practice, but the end result is what would be computed for the actual score, the essay, right? But yes, working on all of those components, and I do think it's an exciting pathway to go down. Exactly.
Okay, we have a caller on the line, Michael. It's from near California. Are you with us, Michael?
Yes, I am.
Great. Thanks for joining the program and for calling in today.
Well, I had a comment or question about how teachers could further be empowered. It seemed like the standardized testing has, in some ways, reduced empowered. I live in a smaller district, and I wonder how much the teachers are even empowered to help select new faculty coming on. It seems like, in some cases, the faculty is more chosen in some of our smaller districts by ability to also coach volleyball and football. Wondered if they'd comment.
Okay. Why don't we start with Carol on that one, then we'll have Margie weigh in as well. You've been a superintendent.
Absolutely.
You've been in a place where you're choosing faculty, right?
I have been superintendent in small districts. And, you know, I always joked with my students in my classes and said, the football and basketball coaches are much more visible than the superintendent in a school district. I started to say a small district, but maybe not just a small one. But there is a challenge there. There's a challenge to hire great teachers, because that's our first, that should be our first call, is to hire great teachers who can do great things in the classroom. But there can also be great things, and students learn a lot outside of the classroom. And if you ask people my age who the most influential people were in their lives, many of them would say a coach or a music director or their art teacher or whomever. So those people are very important in the lives of students. The balance between hiring someone who can be a great instructor inside the classroom with traditional teaching and someone who is a great influence on kids outside the classroom is something that administrators have to do and have to be willing to step up. I do think that teachers and other administrative team members should be involved in that selection and should be involved in how they want their school to continue to grow and how the culture is going to continue to adapt. We say that students are affected by school culture, but it's the adults that shape and maintain it. So it's the adults that really raise the bar and keep excellence in our district.
And what about that question of teacher empowerment? I mean, we're talking about a set of standards. I mean, we've been dealing with our schools following, you know, this reading and math emphasis through No Child Left Behind. You're now talking about a set of standards that you know, would add a whole bunch of other things to the mix there. How empowered are teachers to decide, you know, what and how they're going to run a classroom as we layer on more and more sort of efforts to standardize the student experience? I mean, that's another part of, I think, what Michael was asking is that idea of teachers being empowered to
and
to do things.
And teacher empowerment, this term has been around for a long time, but I think just recently have we started really asking of our teachers and hoping that our teachers will step into leadership positions so that they are in the practice of helping each other. And I really believe that the teaching profession will continue to improve as our teachers steer it in that direction. So, you know, many teachers will say to you, I just want to teach. Just please let me just teach. I don't want to be the principal. I don't want to be the superintendent. I want to be a teacher. That is fine. But a culture that is inclusive and collaborative will always be a better culture in which to teach than one where people, as I said before, go in, close their classroom door, and stay in isolation.
Right. Margie, do you have thoughts on this?
Yes, I think one of the key areas that we want to address is that we're not trying to standardize the experience, we're standardizing the outcome. The experience has to be individualized. So that's where the interesting dynamic comes into play. We're wanting to ensure that all students exit our systems college and career ready, but then giving the teacher the flexibility and the tools to make that a personalization in the classroom is what it's going to take to get there. So what we're really talking about there is something we've talked about for decades. It's the art and the science of teaching. You have to have both. And so some of these teachers that we all really like, they're great to be around, they're wonderful with relationships. You start to look at some of the testing results and we might say, wow, we could really improve in some of these areas for student improvement areas. We might have other teachers who don't have quite the relationship skills yet with their kids, and their scores are, they're still producing some of the scores, or they have the background to do that. So we can learn a lot from both of those scenarios. And then we have some teachers who are knocking the charts out of both of those areas. They've got it down and they're the ones you always remember. And then you have others that don't quite have either of those. So how do we move from highly qualified teachers to highly effective teachers to really focusing and giving them the flexibility to work on that relationship component, but also move our kids to where they need to be and giving them the feedback and the assistance and the tools to help them in that position? I think that's really where we're heading as a state, and the teachers are excited about that. That's where you empower them. If you say, here are your strengths, here's how you can get better, and we're going to help you get better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today, we're talking about standardized testing and other ways to determine how well schools are doing. Joining me in the studio are Carol Mayer, assistant professor in the MU College of Education, Sally Beth Lyon, chief academic officer for Columbia Public Schools, and Margie Van Deven from the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. For those of you in our audience, what would you like to see in our schools that you maybe aren't seeing now? give us a call, share your ideas, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. I want to bring in another of the teacher voices that we got when our team went over to Benton Elementary last week. This is Christy Schlegel. She's a kindergarten teacher at Benton, and let's hear what she had to say with regard to testing and assessing the students.
Well, I definitely think that they should be looking at how involved our parents are. I think they should be looking at, you know, because some students don't have as involved parents, and my kids a lot of times don't have the exposure necessary. So I'm actually exposing them for the very first time to letters, to numbers. And I know that, you know, we do some standardized testing even in kindergarten to look at those types of things.
Okay, again, that was Christy Schlegel, a kindergarten teacher at Benton, talking to our team last week. There are a couple of things that she raises that I want to bring up. The first one is this question of parental involvement and how standardized testing and trying to provide, you know, similar outcomes for students deals with this issue of varying levels of parental involvement in kids' education. Sally Beth, maybe you start us off on that one.
Sure, and as Christy pointed out, also varying levels of preparation. One of our strategic goals in Columbia deals with early childhood, and that students will have quality early childhood experiences to the extent possible provided by the school district. So that is a very critical point, and the assessments that Christy speaks about that we use at the beginning of kindergarten are really intended to tell the teachers what skills students bring with them from their birth to age five experiences, and they can be vastly different. So it's a critical point. We also have a whole section of our strategic plan that's called parent and community involvement, which the state wisely requires of school districts, because we know that families are truly our children's first and best teachers, and if we aren't partners, then we're not doing the best service that we can for our students.
And what is it exactly that the state requires related to that?
The parental involvement in the
that we have a plan, that we have a part.
So just
of our
each
plan.
School has to come up with a plan, or district has to come up with a plan for how they're going to engage parents. Is that it? And how does the state ensure that each school district is actually doing something productive with regard to that goal? I mean, are all those plans evaluated or in some way? Or
they're not typically evaluated unless there is a trigger to do so, such as if we need to go in and conduct a particular on-site review. However, I would like to echo exactly what Sally Beth just mentioned about the early learning programs and how that – I mean, the research is clear that if you're going to get your children off to a good start, quality early learning is essential to that. And we do know that our kindergarten teachers do experience exactly what this teacher was describing, where kids come in at all different levels. And so early learning, critical component, and parental involvement, community, an effective school, from what we have seen, schools we've just been evaluating over the past year, effective buildings have a community that embraces the same goals, the superintendent and the principals and the teacher leaders, they're united in their cause, the parents are there. It takes everybody, and the local school board is another component that is just, again, critical to the success of your school. So putting all of those pieces together will help move things forward.
Okay, the other thing that Christy Schlegel raised in that clip that's interesting is, so they're testing kindergartners? Like, there's a standardized test for kids that are, what, 5 years old?
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
It's called PALS-K. I'm not going to be able to tell you what the acronym stands for, but the L stands for literacy. And it's a teacher-administered assessment. So, you know, standardized doesn't mean it has to be paper right. and pencil and bubble sheets. It could be, as this assessment is, a one-on-one assessment. So you're the five-year-old and I'm the teacher, and we spend about 45 minutes together. And you tell me which of these letters you recognize, and you tell me which of these letter sounds you know. It's standardized because the questions that are asked are the same of every student. The administration guidelines are the same. The students' results can be compared to national norms in order to understand, relatively speaking, where each student is in their entering kindergarten knowledge and skills.
Right. And what are the let's say, the stakes of a test like that for a kindergartner? I mean, what sort of decisions are made about a kid that early on based on a test like that?
That's a really – the whole point of stakes in standardized assessment is huge because standardized assessment results can be so misused if they have inappropriately high stakes. And I think that's been a part of the debate around federal and state accountability. In the case of an assessment like that, they must be entirely formative. We're needing this information in order to know what to teach you and how to organize my class flexible groups in order to promote the best instruction for every child. There's nothing about them that should be high stakes for students. We will also use those results, and a part of the reason we began this assessment is because the United Way, as you know, with community impact, has a real focus on that students have high-quality early childhood experiences. And so this may be one set of data that the community chooses to use, not to evaluate kids, but to evaluate preschool experiences. So it has, in that sense, it might be sort of high stakes for ourselves and other organizations that provide preschool, but it shouldn't. It certainly shouldn't be used to make important conclusive decisions about kids.
And are there mechanisms in place to make sure that is not happening? That you know, kids aren't being routed into one track because of some test they took at age five. Or is it just hopefully
there
administrators are being?
I mean, it's good leadership, and that you don't put systems in place that would be unethical.
Right. In terms of that, though, I mean, part of the No Child Left Behind Act was holding schools accountable for student performance on tests, right? I mean, if schools were not getting the numbers up by a sufficient level of progress, they were deemed sort of non-compliant schools that people could then move their kids out of, right? Wasn't that part of the whole plan?
Right.
What's going to change with Missouri? Is that one of the provisions that Missouri's not going to be following now or not accountable for now that there's a waiver?
Districts and buildings are still accountable for performance at the building level. What it does is it moves to a much more effectual identification of buildings. What No Child Left Behind was doing was that it was putting it on a trajectory of 100% proficiency by the year 2014. So as we were moving into 2012, we predicted approximately 80% of our buildings would not be meeting that mark. Now, we know that if 80% of your buildings are going to be deemed as not meeting that mark, that we have to look at the system to see, is that really the case, or is the system itself broken? And as Secretary Duncan has established, the way that the implementation of No Child Left Behind was happening needs to be revisited, and we're all hoping for ESEA reauthorization. So we are still holding buildings and districts accountable, but we believe we'll be able to do that in a much more effectual way so that districts that really need support and intervention will get that, and those that are doing very well will be recognized as high performers and we'll be able to, you know, use them as models of excellence, and we'll also be able to say, hey, you guys are producing the outcomes, you're making good choices at your local level, continue to make those good choices at your local level and move forward.
Right.
So basically, we'll stay out of your hair if you're doing what needs to be done. And then if not, we can be much more we'll focus our resources so that we can use them to best serve those who need it most.
Right. So is it still in place that if a school is not performing at its projected progress, that a parent can pull their kid and enroll them in a different school? Is that still in place?
No, that has been waived. That was an in-district transfer, so that did impact some of our larger districts. Mm-hmm. And again, since we were moving, you could only move them to a school that wasn't identified as not meeting. So as I say, we were getting to 80% of our buildings that were being identified. So there really wasn't anywhere to move them anymore because most of the buildings were becoming identified. So we think that there is the way that this system is designed makes a much more beneficial use of funding and use of resources than to allow for school choice within the district.
Right. And that idea of progress toward, you know, everybody being proficient or above, is this new system just slowing the time that it might take to get everybody there, or is it actually changing the expectation around what a school should be doing in terms of how many of its students are performing at a certain level?
Well, the term that we're using is ambitious yet attainable goals. You must have attainable goals that are in place. The trajectory that has been established is still very ambitious, and it will require improvement and focus at every building in every district in our state. However, we also believe they're attainable as well, and I think that's a key component. You need to have both of those in place. We're not lessening the expectation. We still expect 100% of our students to exit our systems college and career ready. The 100% proficient on Tuesday in April, no, that is a bit of a challenge. Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, because what that was going after was one test. If you failed in one test, math, communication arts, or graduation rate in one subgroup, you didn't make that particular mark. So still very, very high expectations, all kids. Still breaking it out and looking at all of our subgroups. Very important that we're paying attention to every child, but establishing ambitious yet attainable goals to do that.
Mm-hmm. And how do you decide what is attainable in a situation like that? I mean, that's part of the squishiness here, right?
Well, what we've done is, again, we're developed MCIP 5 as a standardized system.
What you just said, MCIP 5, that's the Missouri standards, right?
I'm sorry, Missouri School Improvement Program, okay. And it's the fifth version of what we're looking at for our new performance. We're moving from the NCLB component to really focusing on our Missouri School Improvement Program standards and indicators. So the annual performance report is designed and will show the percent proficient and the amount of improvement that has been made from prior years, and we'll also be able to use a component of individual student growth for math and communication arts in grades 4 through 8. So all of those pieces together, plus the number of college and career indicators that we talked about and so forth. So what we did was we looked at our top 10 by 20 goals. What will it take if our goal in our state is that all kids will be competitive globally? When they exit our systems, they can compete anywhere. I mean, and we know that this is now a very global society. So our performance will be in the top 10 across the nation or on any international assessments that we might have. We did our trajectories based upon that, what it would take for us to get there, based on a number of assumptions for our state and also the amount of improvement that those other states would be making. And then we stair-stepped back to how we're going to get there. And that's how we set up our targets.
Okay. We just have a little bit of time left. I want to just throw out one quick question. Carol, we'll start with you and see if we have time to get to the others on this. You know, what's something that you'd love to see in our schools that isn't there now, that isn't being done or just isn't part of the mix?
I would love to see us to be able to, and it's not the schools don't want to, but you know, we just can't because of resources. I'd love for us to be able to reach the whole child, the whole family, to be able to have our school as a place where we can help with health care and we can help with nutrition and we can help with socialization or whatever it is, that we can impact the whole child and the whole family. That's what I'd like to see.
Okay, Sally Beth, you're nodding. Do you agree?
Yes, and your vision makes me think of something that's so exciting happening here in Columbia with the United Way Community Impact Model and the collaboration of many, many agencies and government services around supporting, and the school system, around supporting children in terms of positive health care outcomes, education, and family income. It's really very powerful.
That's unfortunately all the time that we have today. I'd like to thank our guests, Carol Mayer, Assistant Professor in the MU College of Education, Sally Beth Lyon, the Chief Academic Officer for Columbia Public Schools, and Margie Van Deven from the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday, and you can join our conversation by joining us at that time. You can also go online and watch a video feed of the program and submit your questions and comments and participate in an online chat with others in the audience. Our full video archive is there as well, including the full hour of today's conversation. Our program takes place in the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Our program is produced by Raymond Tungekar. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Danny Madison. Pat Akers is our audio producer. I'm Ruben Stern. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.